Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We know the teams that are in the market for coaches and general managers. We have heard from them, and already we've moved out of the next stage of the news cycle. The question I have for you, Mike, how fast? Are we talking about another 24 hours, another 48 hours before hirings begin to be announced? What is the gestation period for action?
If I recall last year correctly, and there's a good chance I don't, it took about a week or so before the hires began, and then it becomes a very rapid dominoes begin to fall process. The NFL has been encouraging teams to take time to be deliberate, and for some teams you have the added complication of hiring a general manager, and the Bears are one of those teams, obviously, and even though they want to hire the general manager first, they're interviewing coaches before they have a general manager, which, don't get me started, but I think that's a complicating factor as well. Vikings, Bears, Giants, looking for general manager first, then ideally first, then head coach, that slows it down unless they decide to go coach first and GM second.
Right, and we're seeing that concurrent process happening with the Bears, for example. What are your thoughts on just their hiring process? I do want to get you started because I respect your opinion. And then also just the list of names that we've seen so far, because it is vast and pretty impressive.
Well, it's vast and impressive, but you have to wonder, do they already have an idea of where this plane is going to land and how much of it is? And there's a value in bringing in as many different people as you can, getting different perspectives, picking brains. But I'm troubled by the fact that Ted Phillips, who will be removed from football operations supposedly once this hire of a GM is made, is involved in hiring the GM. And this gets back to something I've said for a long time now. Ted Phillips has basically morphed into a quasi-owner where they're not going to fire him. They're going to find something for him to do. He's going to have influence. But what has he brought the Bears since he's been the president of the team starting in 1999, three playoff victories in 20-plus years, and he and Bill Polian are the two people who seem to be the most responsible for the hiring of a head coach. And I'm not a fan. I said this yesterday morning on the same station. I'm not a fan of bringing in any outside consultant who barnstorms, takes a paycheck, and eventually hooks you up with one of his friends, cronies, the son of a friend or crony, definitely not one of his enemies. You're limiting your universe of hires if you are delegating the ultimate final say as a practical matter to Bill Polian. And frankly, when you prop up Bill Polian, when you announce to the world, well, we brought him in here, we highly respect him, he's a Hall of Famer, he's hired Marv Levy, he's hired Tony Dungy, are you going to reject Bill Polian's final recommendation, whatever it may be? Probably not. And then he's gone. That's the one thing I'd love to see somebody put together, and I haven't done it because I'm too lazy and I'm not sufficiently interested in it to do it. But when we have these consultants, Bill Polian, Charlie Cassidy, Ron Wolf, Ernie Accorsi, you know, it's lather, rinse, repeat. What's their track record for their recommended hires? How have they done? I have a feeling if they've done well, we would have heard about it from them. I just don't like the idea of somebody who has no ongoing accountability, no skin in the game beyond cashing that check and moving forward, telling you who to hire. If you can't figure out on your own who to hire based upon your network of connections, your knowledge of the game, your experience studying the league, talking to people, being around, if you can't figure it out, it's time to sell the team, I think.
Sometimes the football world harmonizes with itself in ways that are satisfying. as it's doing right now, with you talking about Ron Wolf specifically, the news crosses that on the Bears' list now for an interview request would be Patriots front office consultant Elliot Wolf, indeed the 39-year-old son of Ron Wolf, which would fit ideally in somebody that the ghost of Bill Polian might bring in front of you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it doesn't matter who all's on the list. What matters is who Polian eventually recommends. And you're abdicating your decision-making process to someone who is not part of your organization and who only has a very limited role. And this year he's consulting with the Bears. Next year, which competitor of the Bears is he going to consult with? I just don't like it. I want my decisions made by people who are all in with this organization, who are employed by and or who own the team. I want those to be the people making the decisions, not basically throwing their hands in the air and admitting, as a practical matter, we don't know what the hell to do. Let's hire somebody else to tell us what to do.
Well, or then trying to tell you that, like you said, Ted Phillips isn't involved when he is involved. And the other people on that committee, albeit impressive, I think at the end of the day still report to Ted. So that's an issue to me as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And then Ted is going to focus on getting the stadium built and have nothing to do with football. Of course, that may just be what they're telling us because ownership realized this thing was moving toward critical mass, and at some point they were going to have to fire Ted or truly cut him out of the football operation altogether. I just don't know how Phillips goes from having complete and total authority over the general manager to having nothing whatsoever, especially if he's going to hire the general manager. Surely George McCaskey and Ted Phillips are going to be talking about the GM and how the GM is doing and where the GM needs to improve, and that expertise that Ted has built up over 20-plus years is going to come into play until he's gone. I'm not looking to come up with a list of, oh, this person needs to be fired and this person needs to be fired, but if you're firing the coach and the GM, and then in a few years, you fire the coach and the GM. And then in a few years, you fire the coach and the GM. At some point, the person who is hiring these people needs to be accountable for this revolving door. And at some point, 20 years, I don't know, that's a fair statute of limitations. After 20 years, at some point, the person who's making these hires needs to be accountable.
Absolutely. And accountability was not one of the many corporate buzzwords that we heard in that press conference. It gave us zero confidence in the process, but also told some really uncomfortable truths when, I know you heard it too, the question about Olin Krutz and whether or not he had gotten a $15 an hour job offer. And I saw that that was one of the first things that Pro Football Talk reported from that press conference. What did you think of all of that?
Well, I think you find a way to take the high road and not get yourself into a fight with Olin Krutz. And, you know, maybe when the question comes up at the press conference, George McCaskey says, we got far bigger problems right now. We got far bigger challenges right now than getting into a back and forth with Olin Krutz over something that really doesn't matter when it comes to what we're trying to do, which is turn this team around and win football games. Wouldn't that be a better response than throwing it back at Krutz and continuing the entire exchange? Now, the best outcome is to not put one of your former players in a position where he thinks he was offered a $15 an hour job. But I think that so much of success and failure of a team comes down to how key people in the organization handle the media in key moments. And obviously what happened on Monday leaves a lot to be desired.
To what extent is the Bears' definitions and Bears' job titles malleable in a negotiation? If they found the person that they want to run their football side, could it happen, as it has happened in other sports negotiations before, where that person said, you know what, that's great, you want to hire me? I got a couple offers here. You're going to make me president of football operations on the same standing on the masthead as Ted Phillips. Regardless of who's reporting to whom, you're giving me that title or I'm taking a different job. Has that happened? Does that happen? And I know that in some sports and some industries, title inflation gets to be pretty common. We saw it happen for a while in baseball. Could that happen in a Bears negotiation?
Well, I'd like to think it could happen, because why else would you be interviewing Brian Flores when you don't have a general manager? If there isn't a possibility that you are sufficiently blown away by Brian Flores that you decide to modify your structure and put the coach in charge of everything and let the coach hire the general manager that will help him set the table. Otherwise, if you're committed to hiring the GM first, it makes no sense whatsoever to waste your time interviewing a coach that your next GM may not want to hire. What's the point? They should be, if unless they do have flexibility in this process, their only objective for now should be hiring a general manager as quickly as they can, get the right person as quickly as they can with all deliberate speed, and then let that person hire the coach. So with Flores, hey, if they think they got another Belichick here who in his second act can be trusted with personnel authority, and if they understand how things went sideways between Brian Flores and Stephen Ross, and I just think that's an inherently dysfunctional situation in Miami. They never should have fired him. Two straight winning seasons for the first time in a generation. Swept the Patriots this year, 4-2 against Bill Belichick in three seasons. What the hell is Stephen Ross thinking? So maybe they interview Flores and they think, this guy's really got the goods. He can be the coach and the de facto GM. Let's just give him the keys. We could do a lot worse. We've done a lot worse.
You mentioned the second time around. I think of the Jets when it comes to trying not to judge so much of what somebody has done in their career. Todd Bowles comes to mind, being with that organization. And then I realize the Bears' record isn't exactly sparkling in the last 15 years either. Is this a job that is as attractive as it seems to those of us who are not here?
Well, it should be attractive from the standpoint of the city, the fan base, the history. It should be attractive. It really does all depend upon whether or not you're going to be allowed to do your job, how much of Ted Phillips really is going to be hovering over you as you run the team. Are you going to be micromanaged by George McCaskey? If you get the support financially to go out and get the players you need, and you're given a chance to really, you know, plant the seeds and let them grow, then I think it's got the potential. But every one of these jobs, except for the Raiders, because that job opened up for reasons unrelated to wins and losses. The six other jobs that are open because the teams aren't good. So there's already some baked-in dysfunction that you're going to have to deal with if you take these jobs, but it should be an attractive job. First step is, how attractive is it to the GM? Do you get the right GM? And then for the coach that the GM wants to hire, how attractive is that? But, you know, it's something where you want to take your time and do it right, but if you twiddle your thumbs, you're going to lose out on potentially good candidates. And it's a very stressful and pressure-packed time. And, you know, fans have to just sit back and hope that the people who are charged with making the decisions make a good decision so we aren't doing this again 2 or 3 years from now.
Considering everything that you are saying about the inherent weakness of hiring a consultant, of especially one of these retired big names that parachutes in and parachutes out, the Chicago Tribune reported today that Polian's involvement with the Bears began at an unspecified time in season, and that we now know after the fact that the very decisions to fire these guys in the first place were informed by the advice of the ghost of Bill Polian. And I think that's really damn weird. And especially hearing from Matt Nagy all year of this great relationship and collaboration and how well everybody works together, to know that the great and powerful Oz was hiding behind the curtain at some point, helping pull some of these strings, that's kind of messed up. And I'm wondering what it means after the fact, what it says about, and what questions anybody now wanting to take this job should be asking about for whom they're working.
I think we've finally found Mark Conkle's source. Maybe it was Bill Polian. I mean, I'm only being partially facetious, but, you know, the fact that Polian had his spoon in the stew from the middle of the season on, does that make it more plausible or less plausible that they had a plan that they ultimately aborted to move on from Matt Nagy after the Thanksgiving game? It makes it, in my mind, more plausible that was the plan. And again, dysfunctional teams do dysfunctional things, and it would be the height of dysfunction to come up with a tentative plan to fire Nagy during the season and then back off because it got out publicly and let it become public. I mean, it's one dysfunction on top of another, but that just feeds into the idea that, hey, they've already abdicated responsibility to Polian. Tell us what to do. Tell, you know, we let these guys trade our first-round pick next year to move up and get Justin Fields. We let them do that. But we're not going to give them a chance to fully develop Justin Fields. We're going to go ahead and turn everything upside down. Please tell us what to do. If I was a Bears fan, I'd be alarmed by where this potentially could go. I want my team to be owned by a group that is capable of making decisions like that without someone telling them what to do.
It is unstable. Who do you think is the best head coaching candidate right now? Maybe either, and I'll include Harbaugh in this, either in the NFL ranks or perhaps if they're waiting in the wings in college. And who do you think is also one of the strongest general manager candidates?
Well, as to coach, look, it depends upon what you're really looking for, what kind of roster you have, what your objectives are. Jim Harbaugh is a guy you could do a lot worse than 44-19-1. And he's a guy who went into San Francisco a decade ago and immediately turned the team around. They went from 6-10 to the brink of the Super Bowl his first year, to the Super Bowl and the brink of a championship his second year. But it fell apart quickly because, what a shock, good coach is also kind of a jerk. And I think it's incumbent on a properly functioning organization when it gets a good coach who also is kind of a jerk, because it kind of goes hand in hand. I think Tony Dungy's the only successful coach who isn't also kind of a jerk. But you have to have an element of that to hold people accountable and to get people to strive to reach the highest levels of performance and commitment and desire, et cetera. If you could get Harbaugh, and I think he's trying to make a power play to get more money out of Michigan after he cut his salary in half last year because he wasn't getting it done. Now he's getting it done and he's got options. But Harbaugh makes a lot of sense. Flores makes a lot of sense. I think from his perspective, though, I'd want to be very careful about jumping into another situation, because I think you get two shots as an NFL head coach at the most. Joe Judge didn't get a second shot, but Brian Flores did enough that he gets a second shot. Maybe you want to wait a year or two and pick a better spot, pick the best spot, have a chance to really think it through. But I like both of those guys, Harbaugh and Flores. And from a GM standpoint, here's what astounds me, and I need to write about this. I spoke about it today on PFT Live. Why is it that every time a team is looking for a general manager, it is a laundry list of guys who have never been general managers before, and including guys that the casual fan looks at and says, who the hell is that? Oh, that guy's a candidate. Who is it? Oh, this guy's a candidate. Who is it? Why is it that we see coaches who have been successful and ultimately get fired get second chances, but general managers who have been successful and ultimately get fired just kind of disappear? They just kind of go away. It's weird to me. Thomas Dimitroff would be at the top of the list. Like, why isn't he the first name that any of these teams, his first order of business, 2008, he drafted Matt Ryan. He's still the quarterback of the Falcons 14 years later. They went to a Super Bowl, 28-3, but he put together a pretty damn good team. It's just odd to me, and I'm not saying he should get a job. I'm just saying that somebody who has proven they can do the job, whether it's him, whether it's Rick Spielman, Scott Pioli's floating around out there. It's just odd to me that people who have had success in that job don't even get mentioned. I don't understand it. And maybe they pose a threat to the Ted Phillipses of the world. I don't know. And that theory is out there, that the team presidents don't want a GM with experience because that person may have the leverage and the ability to take away influence. But if I was a Bears fan, that's what I'd be saying. Why don't we have some people on this list who have been there and done that and done it at a high level?
Meanwhile, it's wild card weekend. What interests you most in these upcoming games?
Everything. But the one that stands out for me, and I remember this very well in 2005 when the Steelers were left for dead after losing to the Bengals, and it was over. It was done. The Bears actually went to Heinz Field the following Sunday on a snowy day in December, and the Steelers won that game. And they started to piece it together when everyone had expected it was over. Their offensive line was horrendous that year. They stole a spot at the end of the season as a sixth seed. And they got hot. And Mike Tomlin yesterday talking about falling asleep during the Chargers-Raiders game that ultimately determined that the Steelers would have a spot. And if it had been a tie, the Steelers wouldn't have even been in. There was a looseness and a relaxation to Tomlin. It really has me thinking, it's Ben Roethlisberger's last ride. Nobody believes the Steelers should even be there. They're horrible away from from Heinz Field, even though they went to Baltimore and won, and they just got blown out a few weeks back by the Chiefs. I am fascinated by the possibility that the Steelers are going to go in there loose, nothing to lose, catch the Chiefs flat-footed, close game, blocked punt, crazy out. You know, the things we've seen, things that defy all objectivity and common sense. I can't wait to see that game on Sunday night because I got a weird feeling the Steelers are going to catch the Chiefs with an early uppercut and turn it into a game.
I hear an 11-year-old Mike Florio in there, and I love it.
I was never a Steelers fan. I was a Vikings fan growing up.
Okay.
And this is the anniversary of the day that and I grew up in Steelers country.
Right, because that's pure Steelers territory. Okay.
I've been here 50 years in and around Pittsburgh following the NFL. The game that got me interested in the NFL was the Immaculate Reception game. And even and you know, my life would have been a hell of a lot better growing up if I'd have been a Steelers fan. But I know the mindset. And every time this year I pulled that card, hey, they're playing the Ravens, they're supposed to lose. I think they're going to win. They won. Hey, they're playing the Titans, they're supposed to lose. I think they're going to win. They won. I'm starting to feel it come. It's floating around in the ether. Steelers over the Chiefs on Sunday night. Wouldn't that be something?
I like it. I like the confidence and, frankly, the energy pick. Seems like a good idea.
And I'm not just saying it because the game's on NBC, although the game is on NBC. Please tune in for Sunday night. It won't be a blowout. I guarantee it.
Chiefs are playing awfully, like, they are playing better, though, at the time.
I love the fact we have no idea who's going to win the Super Bowl. I really do. This is the first year in a long time where we can look and say, maybe this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. It's a rare treat.
Well, look at the Packers. Hey, if the 49ers or the Buccaneers go to Lambeau Field, I could easily see the Packers being done. Easily.
Wow.
So, wow. It's going to be a fun postseason. Home field advantage is basically dead and gone, even with fans present. Who knows what's going to happen, and that's the way the NFL likes it.
Mike, thank you, sir. We'll talk next week.
Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.